Good afternoon, folks. It's that time of the day again. Time for the elephant in the room on WJAS 1320 AM and Talk 99.1 FM. This is your host, Sam DeMarco, joined in studio by my trusty executive director, John Calvin Coolidge Snader. We also have our producer, who's also the host of, on this station of the D&G Morning Show, Daryl Grandy. Daryl, guys, if you can't, I mean, it's impossible not to notice the pep in my step today, okay? Because Republicans had a heck of a night on Tuesday night. Now, being the greedy person I am, not really, folks, but, you know, I wish we would have won some more seats because we had some great candidates that unfortunately didn't win. But however, we had a great night, and I'm looking forward to spending the next hour talking to you about that along with our next guest. You know, a longtime friend, and he's been on this show many times, but we have Guy Shiraki, who's a writer for Broad and Liberty in Real Clear, Pennsylvania, and a 25-season softball coach and counting. Now, Guy's Broad and Liberty columns focus on common sense conservative policies and our culture. His Real Clear columns offer insights into Pennsylvania politics and suburbs and strategies to rebuild and grow the Republican Party. Guy has served in the past as chief of staff to the lieutenant governor, a member of Congress and state senator, a CEO of the Chester County Chamber, and Republican nominee for Congress. In addition to Politico, Guy's columns are syndicated across Pennsylvania. He's a frequent guest and co-host on Philadelphia Talk Radio, boo, here and across Pennsylvania. Guy serves on the board of the PA Coalition of Public Charter Schools and PA Families for Education Choice. And folks, anybody that follows me on X or anything, you see that I'm a frequent sharer of Guy's columns because they are common sense and very well thought out and well written. Guy, welcome to the show.
Well, Sam, good to be back. And with an introduction like that, there's a lot of pressure on me to say something worthwhile. So I'll do my best.
Well, I'll tell you what, Guy, we were just talking briefly before the show started. It feels good to win a few for a change. And Republicans had a very good night on Tuesday here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. You know, besides electing former President Donald J. Trump to be the 47th president of this United States, you know, Dave McCormick, you know, took down a dynasty in defeating Bob Casey, you know, the current senator from Pennsylvania. And that was an incredible race. We'll talk more about these as we go forward. But we swept all three statewide row offices. Dave Sunday defeated Eugene DePasquale by like 325,000 votes. Tim DeFore beat his opponent, Malcolm Kenyatta, by over 360,000. And Stacey Garrity, she defeated her opponent, Aaron McClellan, by over 434,000 votes. I think Stacey received more votes than any other statewide Republican candidate in history. So phenomenal job. Phenomenal. And then when you factor in addition to that, we won two seats in Congress, you know, out east with Rob Bresnahan and, oh my gosh. Ryan McKenzie. Yes, thank you. You know, see, this is what happens when you get old like me. I think maybe I'm catching Joe Biden disease or something. I don't know. But yeah, so we had a great night, you know. Now if we could just put this last race to bed, Guy, and that's the Dave McCormick-Bob Casey race. You know, here we are, and we're taping this show on Friday, and it's after 1 p.m., and Dave McCormick is still up over 34,000 votes, with more to come from Cambria County, in which Dave is capturing over 60% of the vote total there. But yet Bob Casey and the Democrats are refusing to concede, and they've recruited and brought in Mark Elias, who is like the boogeyman, you know, for the Democrat Party and the lawyers, and they are doing things, folks, that are trying to drag out this election, but they are trying to challenge everything. You know, they want to allow provisional ballots that were cast by unregistered voters to count. Now, think about that. People that couldn't be bothered to register to vote, that they took and pushed to the polls on election day and cast votes, they want to allow those to count. I mean, Guy, these are the people that reminded us for the last 4 years and tried to instruct us on how to gracefully lose an election. And now look at what they're pulling.
Well, you lay out so much, Sam. It's like, you know, where to begin. Let's begin with this. Dave McCormick won. Dave McCormick won by a clear enough margin. Dave McCormick won by enough people, you know, to fill PNC Park. Look, all the ballots that are legitimate that haven't been counted should be counted.
Absolutely.
But if you've been through this before, and you've been through many cycles, and so have I, you know within a great degree of certainty, about 99% certainty, that Dave McCormick won the election, which is why not just Republicans, which is why not just conservative commentators, but even the Associated Press, which some days it's hard to tell if it's any different than Pravda, but even the Associated Press and the Philadelphia Inquirer have said Dave McCormick has won. Because again, we can hold two thoughts in our heads. One is the unremaining ballots that are legitimate should be counted. Two, it is mathematically, virtually mathematically impossible for Dave, for Bob Casey to catch Dave McCormick. You know, I would just add as commentary beyond those facts, which are indisputable, right? In a race where Dave McCormick, out of every 100 votes cast, Dave McCormick is essentially winning 49 of them. 48 of them are Bob Casey's, and the others are going to various candidates. Bob Casey's making the argument that among the remaining ballots, he's going to win 70% of them. No one, I don't even think Bob Casey believes it.
Right.
But my comment is this. We have some serious problems in this country to deal with, from the border to the cost of gasoline, groceries, crime, China, Iran, two wars raging. We have real problems. Bob Casey should honor the fact that the voters have spoken and let Dave McCormick get about the business of getting ready to govern and take care of and represent and fight for us, whether you're a, somebody who works at the cracker plant in Beaver County or works down at the Navy Yard in Philadelphia or is an Amish farmer. Let Dave McCormick go about the business of getting ready and let's get him out of the courtroom playing silly, silly games. And secondly, look, if Bob Casey had put this energy that he's putting into this fight over this petty partisan fight, if Bob Casey had put this energy, put this passion, brought in experts, and done this as our senator, he probably would have won on Tuesday. But the reality is that most Pennsylvanians, not just Republicans, but even some independents, many independents and some Democrats, realized that he did bring that passion. So the irony is that after 30 years on the public payroll as an elected official, 18 years as our senator, the moment at which he's shown the most passion, the most fight, is to keep his paycheck and perks. And that's a sad legacy for him to leave. And I wish he would leave with some dignity and quiet and let Dave McCormick get ready to jump in the fray and fight for the things and help fix the problems that Casey and his friends created.
No, I couldn't agree more. You know, and you're spot on there. You know, this is a guy that has been in the Senate for the last 18 years and has virtually done nothing. I mean, I've been interviewed by reporters yesterday who wanted to know, you know, my thoughts on the AP declaring the race for McCormick. And I said that, I was very enthused and I was excited, but I said I would challenge even the reporter to name a single signature piece of legislation that Bob Casey voted for or sponsored, that made a difference in the lives of Pennsylvanians, you know, and they agreed, right? Here's a guy that was in the Senate for 18 years, but I'm not aware that he chairs a single committee. So,
No, I mean, look, he Senator Casey's campaign committee and the various and sundry committees that filled our TV screens during the baseball football season, and even if you were watching shows on Hulu or on YouTube, we were treated to what in the end will probably be between $300 and $400 million worth of advertising just for Senator Casey. If Senator Casey had passed a meaningful piece of legislation, if Senator Casey had been part of a major initiative, if Senator Casey had saved a community project, a local business, or made a difference in some community from Erie to South Philly, they would have shown us in the $400 million they spent. Instead, they spent that time lying about Dave McCormick, yelling about Dave McCormick, criticizing Dave McCormick, and then in October, Senator Casey tried to tell us how much he liked working with President Trump and was ready to do it again. If there was something positive he could have said, he had more resources than almost any Senate candidate in the United States of America. He could have told us, and more importantly than the ad, to your point, Sam, if he had really made a difference in some issue, in some project, in some community, you wouldn't have had to run an ad, because people walking around downtown Pittsburgh or the North Hills or people walking around suburban Philadelphia would have known it already. Right. If you're sort of our age, you know, you may have liked or not liked Senator Spector, but you had no doubt the guy was busting his tail and involved in projects. He was there at ribbon cuttings. He was there when plants were closing. He was there when plants were opening. He was busting his tail. You may not have known everything about Pat Toomey, but you knew sure as heck the guy was smart and he was focused on the economy. He was always talking about ways to fix the economy and grow jobs. You had a sense that he was involved in that. He may not have been involved in everything, but you knew Pat Toomey was focused like a laser on the economy and creating jobs and trying to make the economy work for people. Senator Casey is a senator for 18 years, and that's what he's going to put on his LinkedIn profile, and not much more. So the one honorable thing he could do now is concede this race and then go about his business, close this chapter of his life, do it with honor and dignity, and let Dave McCormick go fight for us as the way the majority of Pennsylvanians voted, and respect that. Look, you and I have run for office, and sometimes you win and sometimes you lose.
Right.
But people look to you to say, you know, fight a good fight and then step aside and let the winner go do his or her business.
Well, that's part of leadership, you know, and that's, I mean, Casey is showing the same lack of leadership here, you know, in this regard, as he's shown, you know, in much of his career. So there's not a lot more to be expected. But hey, you know, Senator-elect McCormick had a press conference, you know, Friday morning down in downtown Pittsburgh, and he talked about the need to move forward. So, you know, Senator-elect McCormick, who lost, knows what it's like to lose a close race, having lost in the Republican primary to Mehmet Oz back in 2022 by like 952 votes.
Right.
You know, he respects Senator Casey's right to, you know, work through his own process. But Senator-elect McCormick, you know, feels that it's time for him to move on, to go about working on the people's business and work on behalf of all the people of Pennsylvania, whether they voted for him or not. And I wish him, you know, trying to think of the right words to use, but I wish him the very best in being able to do so. I look forward to what we in Pennsylvania can, how we can benefit from having a true leader and a real fighter in the United States Senate in Washington.
Yeah, and that's, you know, we have some real issues. There are some things to be fixed, and the time for blame and finger pointing is over. Now that, you know, the Republicans have won, and as you and I have talked on other occasions, and we talked even before this interview, the elections are a lot of fun, but the reason we have elections is not for the cool ads or the neat slogans. It's not for the posters or the banners. It's not even for the hugs and the champagne or beer on election night. It's because we truly believe in things. And so what I think is so exciting about Dave McCormick is the energy he brought to the campaign, traveling across the state in his bus, going to all types of neighborhoods, is that you see that now in the transition. There are some real problems in the country, and there's some common sense solutions. Things won't be fixed overnight, but it's time to get back to the business of fixing them. We had an administration that created these problems and worse, didn't seem really interested in or focused on wanting to fix them. Dave McCormick wants to be part of the solution, and he will be judged on how hard he worked and how successful it would be on the solutions. And some of them are common sense. Some of them are complicated. It'll take time. But, you know, focusing on the border, focusing on the economy, focusing on American energy, focusing on making sure tax dollars are not wasted on silly projects, whether they're DE&I projects or programs, whether it's misusing our military, whatever it may be, there's a lot of work to be done, and I'm glad to see that, you know, Senator-elect McCormick is focused on and talking about those things, And whether you voted for him or not, everybody should be rooting for him to be part of the solution and to bring, you know, in the good American tradition, for him to bring his skills and expertise and what he learned traveling across the state from one end to the other. Let him come and bring that lifetime of experience and the campaign experience to be part of the solution. That's what's exciting, and he seems focused on it, and I encourage him to keep on that path.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I'm looking forward to a much brighter future and better things here from Senator-elect McCormick, you know, as we move forward. So, you know, we had a good night. You know, I can't but want to take this opportunity to thank not just all of our local candidates who ran who weren't successful, you know, the men and women who stepped up, put their name on the ballot, gave so generously of their time, in many cases their treasure, took time away from their families to go out and give the voters of their district, you know, a choice. You know, I want to personally thank Jen Dentini, who ran for state senate in the 45th state senatorial district. She was a phenomenal candidate. You know, she had a bright, uplifting, optimistic, you know, vision. And I thought she would have made an excellent senator in the 45th state senatorial district. You have James Hayes. I mean, James Hayes, I mean, he's just an incredibly intelligent, educated, articulate representative. But unfortunately, he was going up against Summer Lee, you know, in a heavily, heavily Democrat district in PA 12 and was unsuccessful, you know, in Congress, in his race for Congress. You had Rob McCurry, current state representative in the 28th legislative district, who was on our show just 2 weeks ago. And Rob was running for Congress in PA 17, but was unsuccessful in his race against Chris DeLuzio. Rob is somebody that we certainly hope doesn't go away. Think he has a very bright future. West Point graduate, Bronze Star winner, you know, Iraqi War veteran. This is somebody that I would love to keep around, but we want to thank him for his hard work and efforts. And we had a number of folks, candidates here running for Pennsylvania House. I mean, these are folks who in many cases ran write-in campaigns to get on the ballot, you know, in the primary, so that the voters of their districts could have a choice. You know, Gary Lotz in the 33rd district. I want to thank Nathan Wolf, who really gave Arvin Ventcat a run up in the 30th. We have Stone Sobieski down in PA 36. There was a 38. You know, we had James Julius in the 45th legislative district, and we had Joseph Leckenby out there in the 42nd. So these folks, I can't thank them enough. Oh, and Matt Kruth 20th. In the 20th.
And John Ritter in the
25th. District,
25th. Yep.
And so I want to thank all of these women and men for their hard work. You know, running for office, as you know, Guy, is not easy. And there's a lot that goes into it. And, you know, I want to thank them for everything they put forth and hope they continue to stay involved here in the Republican Party. They are leaders in their communities, even if they haven't, you know, won those titles yet. I also want to congratulate our winners here. You know, Devlin Robinson, our state senator in the 37th state senatorial district, won his reelection. Congratulations, Devlin. Semper Fi. I want to take and congratulate Valerie Gatas on her win in the 44th legislative district. Natalie Mihalik on her win in the 40th. Andrew Kuzma on his win in the 39th. Jason Ortiz on his win in the 46th.
And Jeremy Schaefer.
Jeremy Schaefer, they say third time's a charm.
Sure.
Okay.
Amen.
And this was it. You know, Jeremy Schaefer won election to the state house in the 28th legislative district. You know, that was Rob's old seat. Okay. To all of those folks, I want to congratulate you all and tell you that, hey, we're looking forward to big things from you folks. We know that the Democrats held on to the majority in the Pennsylvania House, but we want to see you go there, represent our principles and values, and see what you can get done, where you can find common ground to move things forward on behalf of the people of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and the voters in your district. So thanks for giving me that opportunity, Guy, to really thank those folks, because you know, I don't think people appreciate everything that folks go through when they run for office. And I certainly wanted to make sure that they understood that we, you know, have a great sense of gratitude toward them, and you wanted to recognize them. So thank you.
Well, it's good that you do that, right? But the other part is, and you're being humble, especially with your team there with you, right, is that, you know, you're instrumental in helping recruit those candidates, to find good candidates, to give voters a choice, even in some races where the odds of success for a Republican are challenging. But you have a record of finding very good candidates who run very hard, even when the mountain is tall, and represent well, and talk about what the party believes, and talk about solutions to problems. And we're in the one of the counties where the Harris team and the Democratic Party was looking to roll up numbers for her, but also looking to push back and get rid of some of the people who were successful, and to take the seat up in the North Hills, to take Rob McCurry's old health seat, not let Jeremy win. So the team there, the committee people, the volunteers, and all the other business groups, community groups, education groups, taxpayer groups, everybody that helped pitch in should celebrate the win and recognize that the wins are important. And as you said, if you fell short, there's a place for you. You know, maybe today or tomorrow, you're still a little tired or you're disappointed. Mm-hmm. We've all been there. But there's a place for you to help other candidates and push for the issues that motivated you to run and stay involved. And I think it's a credit to have good candidates. I think it's a credit to you that so many of them won. And I do hope the others stay involved. And as far as the state house, look, it couldn't be any closer. For the second election in a row, the voters of Pennsylvania have given us an overwhelmingly Republican Senate at 28-22, mm-hmm. but a state house that is 102-101. It literally cannot get closer. It's at 102-101. And I hope that the House Democrats, while sticking to their principles, you know, I'm sure they're going to want to stick to their principles, but I hope they find a way to do it better this time than last, because as your listeners probably know, and people that follow this, the unfortunate reality of 102-101 was that the 102 governed with a heavy hand and really silenced the 101 far more. You get far more opportunity to speak your mind and to have your say in the Senate as a Democrat, where you're outnumbered 28-22, than you do as a Republican, where you're only outnumbered by one vote.
Right.
And worse, as you and I have talked in other interviews, and we joke, but you know, every time, heaven forbid, that a Democrat passed away or was given another job or promoted or became a judge or whatever the case may be, they shut down the House. You know, they told us for 3 months there was a leak in the roof and they couldn't meet. And nobody on the planet believed that. Nobody in Pennsylvania that followed it. So I do hope that now that we go back to this, you know, Republican majority in the Senate and this slimmest of majorities in the House, that the House leadership finds a way to govern. You know, it's too much to ask them to govern as Republicans. I understand that. But I hope they find a way to work on business in Pennsylvania, because we have an energy industry that could help the whole state. We have some public schools that are just train wrecks for our kids. We have an agriculture community that has been harmed through overregulation that could use help. There's some real opportunities for growth and some real problems that need to be fixed. And, you know, I hope this new group figures a way to do it, and we don't spend the next 2 years just fighting at each other or, frankly, with the House. The Pennsylvania House was out of session more days than it was in. I hope they find a way to be in session doing business and focus on problems that we talk about at our kitchen table.
Well, I agree with you there, and hopefully some, even just a few, you know, Democrats in the Pennsylvania House take a lesson away from what took place on Tuesday and recognize that the pendulum is now swinging back in the other direction. You know, and many of the extreme policies supported by the far left in their party, you know, are no longer, you know, popular, having been proven to fail, and that the people want to move forward, they want progress, they want to get things done. And I'm looking forward to talking with you more about this right after the break. Folks, we have to take a break here. The Elephant in the Room. We'll be right back. This is Sam DeMarco and The Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM. 99.1 FM Talk. Welcome back, folks, to the Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. Before the break, we were talking with Guy Shiraki, our guest from the other side of the state, and Guy's still with us here. And Guy, I mean, hey, you know, we were just talking about our hopes, our fervent hopes, that the Democrats in the Pennsylvania House recognize that that humble majority is what they would call it, although they certainly governed as anything but. But hopefully the results of Tuesday night's election will lead them to find some common ground with Republicans and work for things that will benefit the lives of the people of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. What would your priorities be looking forward here if you were able to set the agenda?
So when President Trump calls me this weekend and says, hey, Guy, what should we do? Here's what I would say. Look, here's what I think that the one thing that all across Pennsylvania and all across the nation, issue one is the economy. Issue number one is absolutely the economy. Things cost too much. Workplaces are, in some cases, unstable. Small, medium-sized businesses are anxious. They're not sure whether to expand or let people go. Big businesses have been hoarding cash, which is why our Democratic friends scream about profits. It's not so much profits. The big companies were hoarding cash because they didn't know what was going to happen next in the economy. They're very anxious. So I think step one has to be the economy. And I think there are three things that the president can do consistent with his campaign to work on the economy. One, remind everybody that we have enough oil and gas and even coal to make America energy independent, and that he wants to get America on the path to energy independence and get our need to rely on foreign countries down to single digits before he leaves. That alone, letting the oil and gas and even the coal industry know that they can produce clean energy and supply us and supply our businesses and eventually get to a point where we can supply our allies to make the world more stable, that will begin to bring down prices and create jobs. I think the second thing he needs to do is explain that any of this earmarked, wasteful, silly spending on DE&I training and pet projects for members and some of the billions of unspent COVID dollars, that silliness is going to end, and that the national debt, that he's going to begin to chip away at that national debt by stopping the silliness of wasteful spending. That would be a positive because it's less pressure to raise taxes and less debt that our kids and grandkids are going to have. And then the third is, I think that some of the things he talked about in terms of tax reduction for particularly for small businesses and for middle-class families, He has to remind us and reaffirm that those things, whether it was dealing with Social Security, tips, overtime, begin to let people know that in 2025, more money is coming into their pockets, not because of a government handout, not because we're going to tax, you know, the people on the even side of the street and give the money to the people on the odd side of the street, but we're going to let people on both sides of the street keep more. So those are three things that I would say, but, you know, that's under the umbrella. Step one is the economy. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that people affects everyone, regardless of your tax bracket, but especially if you're middle class or working class, that I think he should do. And I think that if he does that, he will reassure the public and will begin to make tangible difference in our lives and build up a reservoir of goodwill as we go on to the next. I mean, clearly the sort of the two crises after that are illegal immigration. He has to come up with a way to secure the border. And, you know, when everybody says, well, how do you get rid of 13 million people? Well, I think what should unite Democrats and Republicans and independents is, how about if we start with the people we arrest who are committing crimes, active violent crimes here, not just the crime of sneaking in illegally, but, you know, any Democrat of any stripe from any state who wants to be an impediment to that, that's not going to get it rid of 13 million overnight. But how about if we start with the people that commit crimes here, they go back. And then second is, you know, the international, where you see already that there's a willingness for the parties in Ukraine and Russia to talk, and you see already things are beginning to change in the Middle East. I mean, there on a personal note, I hope that he's able to work with the Israeli government and our allies to explain to Hamas, there is no conversation until the hostages are released, the American hostages, any other European hostages, and the Israeli hostages are released. When the hostages are released, we can talk all sorts of things about sewer systems, waterways, agriculture, reading programs, but that. So think of those things, Sam. I mean, you know, and I ask your listeners to reflect. This is not, this is not simply, you know, should I-79 be three lanes or four lanes? I mean, these are some big things. I think it begins with the economy, which is most important to our daily lives, and then he has to go on to these other issues that really come down to one central issue, which is safety and security.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think, to your point on tax cuts, Guy, I think that's going to be a layup for them, and one of the first things that they will do is because the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that he passed back in 2017, they sunset in 2025. So I believe that putting those in place, either to make those permanent or to take and at least extend them, I think that's going to be the first order of business. And then, as you pointed out, you know, his promises to no tax on Social Security, no tax on tips, no tax on overtime. I don't know to what degree, you know, they'll be able to get all of those through or added to it, or at least in part, whatever it may be. But that's certainly something that they can sit down and work on immediately. And, you know, as you pointed out, since the former president's reelection here, in just a few days, you know, folks around the globe, you know, that are currently embroiled in conflict are reacting differently. You know, I mean, Hamas realizes that, you know, President Trump is a strong leader, will no longer, you know, try to put a leash on the Israelite government as they look to defend themselves. You know, the folks in Ukraine, yeah, are recognizing that it will no longer be a blank checkbook here from the United States, you know, without having the Europeans kick in their fair share, but that it's time for folks to talk about peace. And it seems Vladimir Putin has recognized that as well. It signaled a willingness to come to the table. So, you know, we can look forward, you know, to these things happening and, you know, hopefully peace around the globe. And, you know, I look forward to the new president, President-elect Trump, taking and rebuilding our military. It was amazing after the job that he did in the 4 years he was in, the Biden administration comes in, and instead of trying to take and increase or improve the lethality of our armed forces, set about, you know, trying to take and indoctrinate them with DEI, wanted to take and use our military defense budget, paying for transgender surgeries, spend so much money on things like biofuels because they're concerned about global warming, instead of, can we protect our troops and can we defeat the enemy? I mean, it's ridiculous. So I'm looking forward to a lot of those things as well. And I just think, to your point about the economy, he's going to take the handcuffs off the economy via deregulation. You know, when he was in the last time, he said for every new regulation, we need to take and remove two. And he exceeded that number. I mean, I think he took and removed like 13 to 1 for every new regulation. Yeah. You know, they cut 13. So I believe that the economy is going to take off, and that's one of the reasons why you saw the stock market go up almost 1,500 points, or it did go up 1,500 points after his win on Tuesday.
Yeah, well, again, it's about priorities, and it's about common sense, and it's about fighting. And the priorities, right, you said it. The men and women who sign up to be in the military, that enlist, that volunteer to join, that go to our service academies, they're called to a sense of duty, to patriotism, to protecting their family, their communities, our nation, our way of life. Putting them in classrooms and giving them DE&I training is not helpful and not a good use of time. Asking the Army Corps of Engineers and the folks in the private sector that partner or make things for the military, everything from weapons to tanks to missiles to assault vehicles, asking them to spend time creating biofuels rather than coming up with ways that the armor can withstand drone attacks is silly. The difference is a lot of this stuff, Sam, is almost laughable, but it's not funny. It's not funny if your son or daughter is stationed in Poland or Germany. It's not funny if your son or daughter is on a submarine off the coast of Korea. It's not funny if you have family that are living in and around a place that is vulnerable. it's not funny to know that our military is sitting in DE&I training, and that we have men and women serving in the military that are sometimes cross-dressing. It's not funny that we're wasting time trying to see if tanks can run with solar panels or biofuels. The Chinese are not doing that. The Iranians are not doing that. The Russians are not doing that. The terrorists from Hamas and Hezbollah and the other organizations are not doing that. They're trying to take territory or take our supplies or take our energy or take our way of life away from us, whether it's through cyber attacks, drone attacks, or attacks on our infrastructure or our men and women serving around the world. So to your point, it is about common sense and it is about focus. So step one is let's put our priorities in order. And then anybody, Democrat or Republican, that has an idea and wants to be part of the discussion on common sense, on real security, on real growth, and to your point about the regulations, right? This is an important point. This is a fundamental difference between the parties. Without fanfare, without press conferences, President Trump's commitment and his team's focus on reducing regulations and on growing the economy for everybody led to things that the mainstream media rarely talked about. By the end of 2019, pre-COVID, by the end of 2019, new businesses started by people who were either women or African American were at their highest point at any time since we recorded such things. Not because Washington was taking money from people on the North Hills and giving it to people in the South Hills. Not because we were taking it from people who live on the odd number side of the street and giving it to the even number. Not because we were taking money away from factory workers and giving it to people who were making widgets. No, by creating an environment where the economy was growing, to creating an environment where regulation wasn't in the way. And so the Democrats' response is Kamala Harris, and again, I only use this for reference. I don't want to go back, I want to go forward, but she wanted to, quote, fix the economy by giving people money to buy a house. She wanted to fight inflation by helping give money to people to buy a house. She wanted to fix the economy by giving people money to go start a business. That's not what entrepreneurs are looking for. And if you talk to entrepreneurs, whether that entrepreneur is the mechanic who works at an auto dealership and decides to open his own business, or somebody listening to you that may have created an app or a new service or an AI application. The problem isn't money. It's using licensing and regulation. The money's down the road. It's the problems in the way. So our side comes, and you and I and your listeners need to hold them accountable, that says the priorities are going to be different. The men and women in military are going to be focused on national security and protecting themselves. And we're going to focus on protecting them. And second, we're going to focus on the economy. And we don't grow the economy by raising taxes and redistributing wealth. And we don't grow the economy by handing out tax dollars. We do it by lowering spending and lowering regulation, lowering taxes, so that people can go to work and that people who have the spirit of entrepreneurism can start a business and grow a business. It worked. This isn't just trying to battle ideas for the sake of it. We know it worked. At the end of 2019, the unemployment rate was around 2%, and those African Americans and females who decided to start businesses were doing so at a rate that had never been recorded before. We can do this. It won't happen overnight, but we can do this, and the things you outlined are part of the solution.
Well, I am, for one, I'm looking forward to it, but after I take a well-needed break, you know, and I'm sure you as well, could get some rest here. This was a long, long campaign. And, you know, I think many of us, while happy, you know, with the results, now we need to deal with what comes next. And that...
No doubt. The governing, like you and I discussed, the governing is what's important.
Yes.
The good news is, I mean, you know, the governing is what's important. The bad news or the challenge is that there are real problems that affect everybody listening to this. The good news is there are common sense solutions and things that can be done. And we do have to make sure that we even hold our Republican friends accountable and that we do the things we actually promise. We do need a little rest, but, my experience in life, watching sports and coaching, right? Mm-hmm. There's sometimes you go out and coach and you know, I coach girls softball, and there's sometimes in the fall it's 36 degrees and maybe it's even drizzling, and you say, yeah, it's cold and miserable and muddy on both sides, but the team winning, it's not quite as cold on their side. When you stay up late and watch the Steelers or the Eagles on Monday Night Football, and you don't go to bed until 12:30, 1 o'clock, if the Steelers or the Eagles win, you're not quite as tired as when they lose. Yes. When they lose, you sort of sit there and you say, I got to get up in 5 hours. And that's sort of how I feel right now. I think we're all physically and mentally tired. But I think it's a good tired, like after a good workout or a good sense of accomplishment. There's a lot of work to be done. We do need some time to recharge our batteries. But when we come back focused on real problems. But the good news is we have real solutions. And now we get to really, whether we're in government or outside, we get to help cheer on, recruit, and hold them accountable. And I am very optimistic that we can make a real positive impact in people's lives.
And so am I, Guy. And you were spot on with, you know, how we feel. You know, the day after, I can tell you when the Pittsburgh Steelers lose, the next week It's almost like a morgue, you know, at least on that Monday, right? And when they win, people have a bounce in their step. So you're absolutely right. We need to look at what comes forward and what comes next. But, you know, while we do that, and we laid out like an agenda, one that you would wish we have, I laid out one that I would like to see. But I think it's also important for us to let folks know what's not going to happen because of what took place, the results of the election on Tuesday. And those are things like they're not going to pack the Supreme Court now, as Democrats had promised. Republicans are not going to get rid of the filibuster in the U.S. Senate, as Democrats had promised. You know, they are not, D.C. and Puerto Rico are not going to become new states so that Democrats can have four more Democrat senators to enshrine themselves in the majority. I mean, there were a lot of, it's not just all the good things that we can look forward to. There's also, I think, a sigh of relief on some of the things that folks may have felt threatened this country, you know, that we know aren't going to take place. And I saw this morning, but Democrats seem to be pressuring Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor to ask her to retire or to leave so that Biden can get an opportunity to appoint someone else. And I mean, these are the stakes that they're playing with. And, you know, with former President Trump being reelected, you know, he may have the ability or the opportunity to appoint a number of Supreme Court justices during his term and possibly change this court or keep it conservative for a generation. And, you know, Democrats, they win every time a Republican is elected. Yeah, every time there's a election there, they come across, it's a no-lose for them because they know if it's a Republican judge that gets appointed, they're going to rule by the law, according to the law. And if it's a Democrat judge that gets appointed, then they believe that they win because they can get them to rule, you know, based upon the issue. So for Democrats, it's a win-win. But for Republicans, this win on Tuesday night was absolutely huge.
Yeah, it is. And I think it is disappointing. Disappointing is a charitable description of the idea that, you know, to hurry up in the face of a national election where the voters have spoken. And again, you and I have been on both sides of those. Mm-hmm. But when there's been such a clear result, to be so cynical as to, with no notice, with no reason, with no other thing than raw power, to suggest that a liberal member of the Supreme Court should leave so that President Biden can rush somebody through in the final days is ridiculous. I hope they don't do it, not just simply because I think we need judges and justices that respect the law, not who are going to try to be legislators. But again, it's just, you know, I just come from a mindset of I like the rule of law, and I like, you know, that sort of thing instead of raw power. And the voters, you can argue, just overwhelmingly voted against using government as a weapon or using government for political powers purposes. So I hope that doesn't happen. And if forced to that, I hope that there's at least one or two Democratic senators who make sure it's known to the White House that that is not something that they're open to, regardless of who the nominee would be. Again, we have real issues. President Biden struck a nice tone yesterday when he spoke mm-hmm. and said, let's have a good transfer of power. He has spoken to President-elect Trump. Like I said, like we've discussed, there are real problems. The time now is not to talk about or place blame, but there are real problems. And the folks that won should get about the business of figuring out what their priorities are going to be and how they're going to try and work to solve them. We don't need other distractions.
Well, like you alluded to earlier in the show, it's the governing that's the real work that needs to take place.
Yeah.
And the sooner we can get focused on that, the better. I just find it just insane that, you know, they threw aside, they moved aside a sitting president and removed him from a campaign to substitute, you know, another nominee. And then here they're trying to do something similar with one of our other institutions, the Supreme Court. You know, and it's just ironic how this stuff happens.
Yeah, it's ironic, but unfortunately it's not. I'm no longer surprised, I guess I should say. We just went through an election cycle to bring it back to Pennsylvania where, you know, the Democratic Party told us that Donald Trump was Hitler, that Donald Trump was a Nazi, that his supporters were Nazis, that they were garbage. And then Bob Casey spent $5 million, $10 million on TV ads saying he had worked with President Trump and could work with him again. And you wonder why people are cynical, and you wonder why some people sometimes don't even vote. It's because they see that, and they look and say, look, you know, I think most people sort of have the BS detectors. And when Republicans say, you know, Democrats are bad, and Democrats say Republicans are bad, and you're going to ruin the economy, you're going to ruin crime, I think voters say, like, okay, that's nice. You're like, okay, that's just politicians being politicians. It's candidates being candidates. That's fine. When you start down the Hitler-Nazi road, I think it's when voters tune out or voters say, okay, that goes beyond the pale. And what we're finding more and more is that this, you know, threat to democracy and all this stuff, it's just jargon. It's just slogan hearing. It's just stuff. It's Madison Avenue focus group words to shock people. They don't really think, most Democrats don't really think that Donald Trump is a Nazi. Most of them don't think democracy is in danger. They do that. They do undermine democracy when they start talking about changing Supreme Court justices days after a historic shift where the voters clearly pulled in the other direction. This is why I hope they don't do it. As I said, a lot for me personally, a lot of this is just not wanting my party or, more importantly, my ideas to win. It's the fabric of America. And I think a shameful partisan power grab like that really is not just bad because I disagree with the idea. It's that I disagree with the principle of doing things that actually do pull apart our nation. Not the sloganeering, you know, I'm not going to accuse anybody of any name calling. I'm just going to say, you know, doing this is harmful. So I'm disappointed, but unfortunately I'm no longer surprised.
Well, and it's sad to say, but neither am I. You know, and we've seen something the last couple of years is a deliberate attempt by some on the left to delegitimize the United States Supreme Court, you know, mm-hmm. and the constant attacks on folks like Clarence Thomas and others. It's unbecoming, you know, of one branch of government, you know, attacking and trying to delegitimize the other. And something like this, again, just serves to, you know, disappoint many, many of our listeners and folks across the spectrum. Hey, Guy, we have about 60 seconds left. What's the message that you would like the listeners here to leave with as they go about their weekend, you know, and look forward to a new week and a new governing majority in Washington, D.C. and in Harrisburg?
Yeah, so two things. One is if you voted for and supported the folks that won, you know, President Trump, Dave McCormick, your state legislators, celebrate the victory. But help them, work with them, and hold them accountable to do the things they promised, our economy, our safety. Be involved. You don't have to necessarily be involved at the fever pitch you were, but be involved. And second, if you didn't support, but you care about those things, take a look at what the Republicans are going to do to deal with real problems on the economy, on the border, on crime and things. And as you see, millions of Americans who never voted Republican before, or whose families had been lifelong Democrats, voted. This is a new Republican Party that will welcome new people of all faiths races, colors, and creeds. If you want to build, make things, go to work, take care of yourself, and you want your kids to grow up in a safe community and go to a good school, consider joining the party or at least helping us on issues you agree with on us. And I hope that's the message to go forward. You know, our side needs to rally and make sure that our guys and gals do the things they promised. And for the others, maybe who are hesitant or skeptical, you know, the door is open, and we do want to grow this party, not just to win elections, but to get things done.
Well, Guy, I couldn't have said it better. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of The Elephant in the Room here. And folks, until next week, Sam DeMarco and The Elephant in the Room, Guy Shirocki, John Schnader, and Daryl Grandy, see you next week. Thank you.